Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Tomorrow, Senator Bernie Sanders is going to be in Burlington talking about the problem of opioid addiction. More than 100 Vermonters died of opiate overdoses last year, and the overdose reversal drug Narcan is being used thousands of times a year just in Vermont alone. But here's the difference between the normal town meetings and the one tomorrow. It's only open to Burlington High School students and staff. The media can attend the panel discussion, but the Q&A is just for the school population, so they can open up and talk about this problem and how it's affecting them and maybe, just maybe, how someone in Washington can do something to help. Bernie Sanders joins us for the first half of today's show. Senator Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Jane.
So why did you want to speak specifically to high school students about opioid abuse?
Because I am extremely worried about the epidemic of opioid overdoses in our state and around the country. What we're going to do tomorrow, and, you know, it's very hard for adults, and I speak as the father of four and the grandfather of seven, it's hard for adults to talk to kids. But I want to do my best, and I'll be there with a physician who will be talking about what addiction is about and how easy it is, especially for young people, to get addicted. We'll have somebody up there speaking about her struggle with addiction. As a woman who used to be a nurse who herself became addicted, and how hard it was to stay away from opioids and heroin. And then we're going to have the Attorney General there kind of talking about what ends up happening if people do get addicted. And the bottom line is two things happen. If people remain addicted, they end up in jail or they end up dead. And I want the young people to understand that. So it is going to be a heartfelt plea to the young people that we love them. We are concerned about them. We know that this is a very tough time for kids to be growing up for a dozen different reasons. But at least I want to get across as best we can that it is a horribly slippery slope, that you start with opioids, that you what addiction is about. It's not, oh, I think I'll try it and tomorrow I won't. Once you start this stuff, it is very, very difficult to get off of it. So that's kind of what the discussion will be about, Jane.
What about what you and other elected representatives can do? I mean, this is certainly something that politicians are talking about, as well as health professionals and obviously families and you know,
sure.
People are talking about this.
The truth is, this is an issue we're going to pay a lot of attention to. That's really not going to be the focus tomorrow. Tomorrow is going to be the focus doing everything that we can to try to see young people turning to opioids or heroin. And that's the message tomorrow. But you're absolutely right. The broader message is, number one, to understand that we have a major healthcare emergency in the United States. Somebody made the point that in the Vietnam War, we lost close to 60,000 brave men and women in that war. We are losing more than that every single year now as a result of opioid and heroin overdoses. And in Vermont, the number of people who have died, as you indicated earlier, is over 100. It's about 112 last year, as best I understand. That is three times more than in 2010. So what do we have to do as a nation? A, recognize the severity of the problem. Number two, raise the funds that we need for prevention and treatment. In a sense, what I'm trying to do tomorrow is prevention, to get the word out to kids so that they do understand the consequences of dealing with opioids or heroin. But we have to do that in schools all across this country. Number three, clearly, we need to do a lot better job in treatment. I think the state of Vermont is doing better than most, but we can do better. And it's an expensive proposition. It means that if you are addicted, there has got to be a place that you can turn to. Not tomorrow, but today, to get the kind of treatment that you need. So those are, and this is going to be an expensive proposition. But these are the things, some of the things that I think we have to do. And last point that I would make is it's important for us to understand how we got into this tragedy in the first place. And I think it has a lot to do with the pharmaceutical industry selling a product, distributing a product, which had not been fully tested in terms of its addictive capabilities. Pain is a serious issue, and there are people who need help for pain. But I think there is very little doubt that the warnings and the studies had not been done as to how addictive some of these products are. And I think we've got to hold the pharmaceutical industry accountable, and obviously physicians have to accept their share of responsibility in knowing that you just cannot widely prescribe something which has such great potential for addiction.
Well, Cigna, the very large health insurer, says it will stop covering prescriptions for OxyContin, won't pay for them in 2018 as part of a way to address opioid abuse. Do you favor that? Do you think that's a good move?
Well, I mean, I think in general that is a movement in the right direction. It is saying that we have a crisis and that we have to significantly cut back the prescribing of something which has the absolute capability of being addictive.
Let's go to Steve, who's calling in from Colchester. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. Bernie, I've been following you for a while and what you're doing, and I think it's absolutely amazing. But on my end, I'm a rural resident at Champlain College, graduated second overall in my class, and now I have 4 years in recovery against opiate addiction. I was prescribed by a doctor, but my question is, I've been fighting this in the trenches for the last 4 years, helping both current addicts and people needing prevention efforts, that being mostly people in schools like you're doing this week, which is incredible. But what I'm finding is that as an addict is I don't have a lot of revenue coming in. I'm doing these things on my own. I own a local business, the landscaping business, but I don't have opportunity to go and talk to state senators or get direct contact with people like you. So what can I do as someone who's been fighting this the last 4 years, both going to school and addicts, to get more help from the government?
Steve, do you mean to get more help? Let me just clarify, Senator Sanders, sorry to interrupt, but Steve, do you mean to get more help for your addiction or to get more help to address this problem?
No, to keep prevention efforts going. So
okay.
I've been working with professionals and myself as an addict, kind of at a round table setting where we all have ideas on how to better this problem.
Okay, got it. All right, so let's put that to Senator
Sanders.
Okay,
I got it. And Steve, number one, give my office a ring in Burlington, and that's obviously true for anybody who is listening. And we'll see what we can do. But I think one of the important ways forward is to have people like Steve and the woman we're going to be having at Burlington High School tomorrow talk about what it means to try to deal with addiction, how difficult it is. So I think there's a very important role for people who are struggling with addiction to explain to younger people what that process is about and how difficult it is. So, Steve, thanks for what you're doing, and give my office a ring. We'll see how we can go forward together.
We, by the way, have a link to Bernie Sanders' website that has all the numbers for how to get in touch with his office. It's at vpr.net. Click on Vermont Edition. Cameron is on the line from Burlington. Hi, Cameron. Go ahead.
Hello. Mr. Sanders, I was just calling to see if there was any information on how we're working towards controlling access of the opioids that are being prescribed. Seems like a lot of the issue is coming from having so much prescriptions go out and having the access be so easy.
I think, Cameron, that's a great question. I think that is an issue. Again, I think the state of Vermont has been one of the states leading this effort. I think there is no debate that in Vermont and throughout this country, first of all, doctors did not have the full knowledge that they should have had regarding the addictive capabilities of some of the drugs that they were dispensing. And number two, too many of them were being given out. So I think there is an effort in Vermont and throughout this country to put much tighter reins on the prescribing of these opioids. And as you heard a moment ago, there's at least one insurance company that's not going to cover one particular drug. So I think that's the direction that we have got to go nationally. We have a crisis. It has to be dealt with. And I would also say that this is going to be a very, very expensive process for the nation to get a handle around this crisis. And I think that the pharmaceutical industry is going to have to, and given the fact that they are making just extraordinary profits right now in general, they're going to have to be asked to help out, help the states, the cities, and towns deal with this issue financially.
Senator Sanders, we have you today. I understand you're in the cloakroom in the Senate, just off the chamber, because you've got some votes coming up this hour. What are you voting on?
We're voting on nominations. I think the one I just cast was for the Office of Controller.
And how did you vote on that?
I voted against that.
Why? You know, one of the issues has been nominations from the Trump administration. And we were speaking with Senator Leahy earlier this week, who said they are just, many of them, completely unqualified. Is that your take as well?
Yes. And they are. Look, the president, Democrat, Republican, conservative, or progressive, you know, has the right to make nominations. But historically, these nominations have been within the mainstream of judicial thought. Many of Trump's nominations have really been extremists. Whether you're talking about judges or whether you're talking about people being nominated to positions in the Environmental Protection Agency who really see their job as destroying the Environmental Protection Agency, not protecting the environment. So I have found myself voting against many, many of the nominations.
Senator Sanders, we've been getting a lot of questions from people about tax plans in both the House and the Senate. The Republicans have come out with plans that have been widely panned by Democrats. Jeffrey in Corinth says, I think the best way to bring the current Republican tax cuts down in flames is for the Democrats and progressives to put forth one of our own. Christine says, the effective corporate tax rate is currently around 20%. Would it be worthwhile to lower the overall tax rate from 35% and close all loopholes so that every company pays the same rate? What corporate tax rate would you suggest so that companies pay their fair share?
To the best of my knowledge, by the way, the effective, i.e. what corporations really
actually pay
is lower
right.
than 20%. And number two, what we should understand is that today, one out of five major profitable corporations pay zero in federal taxes because they are stashing their profits in the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and in other tax havens around the world. So we need real tax reform, but not in the way the Republicans are moving. Real tax reform has got to understand that in America today, the very, very wealthiest people are getting richer. Large corporations are enjoying record-breaking profits in many instances, while the middle class continues to shrink and we have some 40 million people living in poverty. So to my mind, real tax reform does mean getting rid of all kinds of loopholes which currently exist. It means doing away with the absurdity that large corporations can stash their money in tax havens around the world and not pay a nickel in federal taxes. It means a progressive income tax, which says that we should not have a situation where somebody like Warren Buffett, one of the richest people in America, has an effective tax rate lower than his secretaries. So what the Republicans are doing now, and I have to say that Gary Cohn, who is the president's chief economic advisor, Gary Cohn said that the people most excited about what the Republicans are doing for taxes are the CEOs of large corporations. And he's right. That's true. And you got Republicans who are acknowledging that if they don't move forward with this tax package and give huge tax breaks to the wealthy, their campaign contributors will no longer be contributing to their campaigns. That's what this whole thing is about. This is a gift to the wealthy and large corporations. The truth is that in the House bill, at the end of 10 years, almost 50% of the benefits will go to the top 1%. Meanwhile, at the end of that 10 years, some 45% of middle-class people will be paying more in taxes. And in fact, there was just an analysis that came out a few hours ago about the Senate bill, which says that people under $75,000 a year will be paying more in taxes. So let us be clear about what this whole tax proposal is about. It is tax breaks for large campaign contributors. It is setting the groundwork when you run up $1.5 trillion increased deficit to cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Because the Republicans, the day after they pass this, if they are successful, will say, oh my goodness, we have a terrible national debt, and we're going to have to cut back on Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. So, you know, we're going to work hard to defeat this proposal and work on tax reform, which improves the economy and which is fair to working people.
Well, on that note, what is the likelihood that that this tax plan is going to pass and then get reconciled? Because that's what I can't seem to figure out. There's so much talk about this right now and so much talk about trying to pass it with a simple majority.
You're not the only person who is in doubt. Nobody knows. I mean, that's the simple truth. The House bill will pass. Here in the Senate, we had a senator yesterday for the wrong reasons, he thought that corporations were not getting enough in businesses were not getting enough in tax rates. A fellow named Ron Johnson from Wisconsin suggested he would vote against it. We have Susan Collins from Maine, who I think for the right reasons may vote against it. And we need one more Republican. But the answer is nobody really knows. And we think right now, with this recent analysis having come out a few hours ago, as to the fact that so many more people will be paying increased taxes, that the Republicans are probably going to have to go back to the drawing board. I mean, one of the outrages of many in these proposals, House and Senate, is they're wanting to repeal the estate tax. The fact that right now you have a situation where they want to give enormous tax breaks to the top 0.2%. So you have an estate tax in which 99.8% of the people do not pay a nickel, and they want to move to repealing that, which would mean incredible tax breaks of over $50 billion for the Walton family, the wealthiest family in America, for the Koch brothers family, a second wealthiest family for the Trump family. And clearly that is totally absurd.
One of the things included, you just mentioned offshore assets that so many big corporations have. And my understanding is that, and now I can't remember which of the plans it's in, but that at least one of the plans, the House or the Senate plan, would include a chance for companies to bring those offshore dollars back into the United States at a very low rate. This has happened before.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
No, that's correct. And what that means is that companies who have avoided taxes by stashing their money in tax havens in the Cayman Islands or Bermuda or elsewhere would be allowed to bring their money back into this country at a very, very low rate. And I think that that is absurd. And there are other provisions as well, which are designed to help the wealthiest people and the largest corporations. Right now, we have more income and wealth inequality in this country than since the late 1920s, before the Depression. And to my mind, when we have so few people who are doing phenomenally well, while the middle class continues to shrink, I think what we need to do is move toward progressive taxation, which says to the wealthy and large corporations that, no, we're not going to cut Social Security, we're not going to cut Medicare, we're not going to cut Medicaid or education, but we are going to ask you to start paying your fair share of taxes. And we are going to do away with the loopholes that currently exist.
We got a note from Jane in Putney who says, I think that keeping the current Medicare payment system for hospitals and accountable care organizations will be damaging. It will undermine health planning, perpetuating inequalities in hospital resources. It will drive up costs, and it mandates that hospital leaders give primacy to generating profits and avoiding losses. Canada pays hospitals through global operating budgets with separate capital grants. Why not pay hospitals with global operating budgets?
Well, Canada also, as you know, has a very different type of healthcare system than we do. And I am sympathetic to a Medicare for all, single-payer system, which would move us in the direction of where the Canadians go. And when you compare the Canadian system, and I was just up in Toronto, I was just up in Canada a few weeks ago. And when you compare the Canadian system to ours, they, A, manage to provide quality care to all of their people, and B, they do it at about 50% per capita compared to what we do. So the idea that we continue to have a healthcare system which allows the drug companies and the insurance companies to make huge profits while we have tens of millions of people who have zero health insurance and many more who are underinsured with high deductibles and copayments makes no sense to me at all. And that is why, you know, I have introduced a Medicare for All single-payer system, which now has a significant number of co-sponsors.
Heather is calling in from Goshen. Hi, Heather. You're on with Bernie Sanders.
Hi. I wanted to say thank you, Bernie, for all that you've done, and I really agree with your stances, and I really appreciate you speaking out and saying that we need to tax the rich. That makes total sense. They can afford that. I did want to say, though, I really appreciate your education stance, and I was hoping you could do something about the state schools in Vermont because they're some of the highest in-state tuitions out of anywhere in the country.
So, Bernie Sanders, what can you do about in-state tuition? I mean, this is something that the state legislature, by and large, controls. But here's Heather saying, come on, could you please help us out with this?
Well, the answer is obviously that is something that we should be doing. In my view, living in a very competitive global economy, what we have got to be doing is having the best educated workforce and the best educated population in the world. And that's why I believe that we have got to move toward making public colleges and universities tuition-free. And I think that that is going to be happening. I think we are beginning to see, this is something, you know, when I ran for president, we campaigned on, and you're now beginning to see all over the country colleges and states moving in that direction. And we've got to continue that effort. When we make public colleges and universities tuition-free, when we say to every young person in this country, when you are in the fifth grade now, you are in a freshman in high school, that if you do well in school, you will be able to get a college education. That will have a huge impact, in my view, on education in general, and it will make us much, much more competitive in the global economy. The bottom line is that the world has changed over the last 50 years. It was a major step forward decades ago for the United States to say that any young person in this country, regardless of income, should be able to get education through high school. That was a very important breakthrough. But the world has changed. And what we have got to say today, that in a competitive global economy where people need more education in order to do well in the workforce, that we have got to make public colleges and universities tuition-free. And we're working very, very hard on that. And we're also working hard on the absurdity of over 40 million people in this country struggling with student debt. I mean, having committed the crime, if you like, of trying to get a decent education and a decent job. I want this country to have the best educated workforce in the world. And in the long run, it does all of us a lot of good when that happens, not when we continue a situation where hundreds of thousands of bright young people every single year cannot even afford to go to college, and many more are leaving school deeply in debt and really burdened by that debt. So there's a lot of work to do there, and it means getting our priorities right. And that means instead of giving tax breaks to billionaires, instead of spending untold amounts of money on the military, we invest in education in this country, and that every young person, regardless of their income, should have the right to get a college education and not leave school deeply in debt.
Senator Bernie Sanders, I know you have an appointment to get to, so I'm going to let you go. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. Thanks very much.
Well, thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.